Back in 1965, still another mother cried as her son was sent off to a land called Charlie's Paradise. Billy was a soldier in the bush, he played for keeps. The enemy was all around, didn't Charlie ever sleep. Ordered up the hill one day to take it and make a stand. Billy never made it back, he was dealt with Charlie's hand. Maybe he's a lucky one, cause we still feel the pain of a thousand wounded players who took part in Charlie's game. He's one of a million unsung heroes whose story forever goes untold. He left his soul in numb, but his spirit still lives on. He's walking with us on the last patrol. Walking with us on the last patrol.
The Last Patrol Radio Show is a program dedicated to my brothers and sisters who have and to those who are now serving America in the U.S. military, the police and security, firefighters and EMS. This is a veterans-to-veterans ministry. By God's grace, we're here to serve and to help bring the truth to you through the Word and the life of Jesus Christ. I'm Pastor Ted Marshall. I served as a dog man, that is a canine handler, in the U.S. Air Force Security Police in the Vietnam War. I know that the bond we as veterans have is very special, and we can talk to each other. This program is for you and your family. Let us ask for guidance from our Lord to inspire and to hear from Him on how much He loves you. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Philippians 4:7. The Last Patrol Radio Program is a Talk to Vets ministry, hosting guests from the Christian veterans community and the caring and loving people who bring information, loving gratitude for all of you who are our nation's finest treasure. Here in the home of the brave, you are the brave in that home. You and I have a lot to share on subjects we can learn from. Using the Perfect Operations Planning Manual, the POPM, also known as the Bible. Heart to heart, vet to vet, patriot to patriot, welcome home. The Last Patrol is about realizing that we have a mission that we're being called to. Each of us has a special place in this patrol. We have and are now continuing specialized training for this task and mission. This is a highly motivated and extremely skilled operations team with overpowering strength, courage, and leadership support. The air power as well, the universe knows none is awesome. The ground troops are all in the army of the Lord. We are God's warriors. Who can stand against us? Trust the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding in all your ways. Acknowledge Him and He will make your paths straight. Proverbs 3:5-6. Walk with us on the Last Patrol. Hi, this is Pastor Ted Marshall with the Last Patrol Radio Show. Today we're going to bring an update of what's happening with VetFest 2018. And on the line with us is Jerry Weezy. Jerry is the head of this event. It was his brainchild. And Jerry, we just want to catch up with you and let us know what's happening out there. We have a lot of exciting things. They can go to the website. And Jerry, tell us about what's new and what's going on.
Well, the schedule, if you go on the website and you look at the schedule has already been filled in. All the gaps have been filled in now. So we have a complete day of activity on stage beginning at 9 a.m. all the way until 9 p.m. on Thursday, and a complete day on Friday, the 15th of June, from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m. And on Saturday, a complete day from 9 a.m. until 10 p.m., which is what time they close on. Well, because of the disturbing of peace laws, we have to close at 10 o'clock.
I see.
And then Sunday, of course, is our day of worship, and we're having Sunday morning service, and then we're having some gospel music with Sue Ann O'Neill, and I believe she's a minister, and if she would like to, or another minister such as yourself, anybody could do it. We'd like to have prayers for safe travels.
Oh, you bet.
And then the And then, of course, it would be over with, officially over with, at 12 o'clock. So at 12 o'clock, officially, on Sunday, the 17th, the festival ends. As far as updates, I've been working really close with the Illinois National Guard to get some static displays. And I thought that we had a UH-72 Lakota that was going to be on static display from the Army National Guard for Saturday. But I found out today they cannot do that on Friday or Saturday, but they can do it on Thursday.
Oh, okay. That's
so
good.
So the aircraft will be there. It just won't be there on the days that we originally wanted them to be there. And the reason for that is a flight crew is hard to find.
Oh, yeah.
This time, it's summer camp, and it's hard to find a flight crew that's available. But Thursday's the day that we're going to have the flight come up there from, I guess, Decatur, Illinois, at the Army National Guard, and set up a display. We should have some ground vehicles as well. I'm thinking Humvees, maybe an ambulance or something like that. You know, a lot of people coming through the gates are going to be civilians, or I say civilians, we're all going to be civilians, but non-military service in their background, and have never seen these things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it'd be of interest to them, and it's certainly to someone like us, it's just a little walk down memory lane, you know. And of course, these vehicles I'm talking about, the Humvee and the ambulance and the Lakota, are aircraft and vehicles that were not in play when I was in the service. We talked Hueys and Deuce and Has and Jeeps. Well, it's all changed now. It's all new stuff. So it'll be of interest to me as well. We still got a thing with the static display Huey that is supposed to be there. And that will come in on the back of a trailer, a flatbed trailer. And this gentleman, he lets children crawl up into the cockpit and put his helmet on. And I think, I'm not mistaken, I think he's got little flight suits
that
he can put on. And they sit in the cockpit and they put their hands on the collective and whatnot. He takes pictures of them while they're in the cockpit. He's also got some ground things to show as well. This aircraft doesn't fly, so... They could switch everything on and nothing's going to happen, okay?
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
It looks like it's flying, okay?
That's great.
And then I'm looking at my list right here in front of me, by the way. We're going to have the Raminator monster truck. It's going to be there, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's going to be there on Saturday. It's Friday or Saturday. I think Saturday the day we're going to have it. And what they're going to do is they're not going to be jumping and flipping cars, nothing like that. But they're going to let people get up in the cab of this monster truck, and
no, that's quite
again,
a climb.
They can get their and get their picture took.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know? We got looking to get the list. The Schofield Zoo, which is out of Decatur, is going to bring some animals. I wasn't quite clear on what they were bringing in. I don't think we're talking about a petting zoo. I mean, a goat, a pig, you know, a sheep.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're bringing in other types of animals. And they have a show, pretty much a show they do where they demonstrate how to handle these animals. And if they have an alligator, and they might, I'm sure that they'll have its mouth securely closed so it can't clamp down on somebody. But... you know, they might let you hold an alligator or a snake or whatever. But that'll be there. We still got some pony rides for kids. And so I think that's going to be on Saturday as well, if not Friday. It won't be on Thursday, it'll be either Friday or Saturday. One of those animals is a horse, as I understand. And the horse is specifically trained to be very gentle with disabled people.
Oh, cool.
You know, and if you have two limbs missing from combat in Iraq or Afghanistan, you might not want to get on a horse these days. But I guess this horse is very gentle and can accommodate those types of needs. And then we have, I'm looking there, oh, the kite flying. We've got a guy coming in that is I won't call him a professional because he doesn't make any money doing this, but he's a professional kite flyer. And he's got a kite, one kite that you have to clear it with FAA, before you fly this kite.
What?
You know? Yeah, that's what I thought. What? You know, there's an airport 6 miles away. He's got to have a waiver from the FAA to fly these kites. These aren't your typical kites that you fly in the backyard with your grandkids. Okay, I mean, these things are as big as an elephant. And he's going to demonstrate some kite flying. And I think he's got some smaller kites for the kids. I don't know if he's going to have enough for every kid there, but I think he's got some other kites that kids can kind of jump in and join the fun, too. I'm trying to think. We got all kinds of museums are going to be there. We have a Corvette museum on the grounds.
Yeah.
It belongs to Mike Yeager. Mike Yeager's property is where we're hosting. He's actually hosting us on his property.
That's awesome.
And he has a fairly, you know, I mean, it's a really neat museum. It's got probably a dozen Corvettes and Corvettes that were cut away at the factory for training purposes and engines and things he's acquired. It's just neat stuff he's gotten there. And it's all open to the public.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and he also has a Volkswagen museum. That's free to the public. He's got a gas station that was taken apart brick by brick and transported here to his location and reassembled like from the '20s, you know, and, that'll be something that I'm sure it's air conditioned. So if people do anything, they might want to slip over there, get a pocket full of cool air. You know?
Now I've got the address here for the folks that may want to get, put this in their computer to find out how to get there. It's Mid-America Motorsports, and that's 2900 North 3rd Street, Effingham, Illinois. And the zip code is 62401. Once again, Mid-America Motorworks, Motorworks, 2900 North 3rd Street, Effingham, Illinois, 62401. Put that in your Google Maps, and they should be able to get you right there. Now
I'll tell you, it's easy to find, Ted. It really is.
Yeah.
It's on exit 162 on Interstate 57. And Interstate 57 runs north and south through Illinois from Chicago to St. Louis. If you're going to go across the country from the East Coast to the West Coast, there's a good chance you may pass through Illinois. And at some point in time, you have to go over or under or through I-57. You get on I-57 and take exit 162, and if you take exit 162 and then turn back on Route 45 back to the north, it's 1.6 miles away. A guy driving on 45, you know, I say this kind of freely, if you're driving and you can't spot this, you're blind because there's going to be lots of signs, lots of flags, lots of things going on. If you drove by it, it's probably about a mile and a half in length. It's 140 acres.
That's pretty good size.
You know, and it's good size, and he maintains that property like your backyard. He keeps the grass cut. It's level, and you know he's got grounds people that do that, and of course he's got an outdoor stage. He's got paved roads and. He's got all kinds of flags and stuff, so you'll find it easily enough if you take exit 162. And we might even have, you know, I don't know how far we'll go with that, but sometimes reunions that you see these balloons telephone poles.
Yeah.
Maybe something like that. I don't know if it's necessary. But...
Now, I understand also one of the attractions, of course, is the Vietnam Wall, the moving Vietnam Wall, which is going to be there.
Yeah,
and
this is a big one. It's 80% scale.
Wow.
There's been 40% scales and 60% scales, and they're still out there doing what they do, bringing attention to the fallen in Vietnam. But 80% scale is the biggest moving wall that they have, and I suppose the next scale up is 100%.
Yeah.
You know, there might someday be 100% scale, but this is 80% scale. It's like 300 and some feet in length.
Wow.
And it's over 8 foot high at the apex. And We're honored to have that. We're also still trying to get the, you know, they've got a wall, something like that, on the same lines as that, for the fallen from the Iraqi war and Afghanistan war.
Yes, they do. They do.
And I'm trying really hard to get that in conjunction with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a lot of these things are Vietnam related. There's no doubt about that. And the Vietnam veterans, such as myself and probably like yourself, you know, we're retired now, and we can afford to do things like this if we really want to. You know, especially me being retired, I don't have to ask for any time off.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't cost a fortune, something to go do. But there, it's open to everybody, and we really want to invite all of our veterans from the Iraqi and Afghanistan war as well. They've done multiple tours of duty, you know, 5, 6. I can't imagine doing that many tours in Vietnam at all. I mean, just it wouldn't happen with me. I'd go insane trying to do that many tours. But these guys are doing it all the time.
I know.
We want to welcome them just the same as we would anybody else. But like I said, there'll be a lot of Vietnam veterans there for sure. It's also a good chance for anybody to talk to the Vietnam veterans. You know, we're a dying breed, and eventually our voices will be silenced. And all you're going to have is what's recorded or what you might have heard, you know. So it's a good chance for kids to talk to some veterans and find out, you know, what actually went on in Vietnam from our perspective, you know.
Jerry, recently I was at the 301 Museum, which is here in Tampa. It's the Hillsborough County Veterans Museum, and also they have all kinds of nice monuments and so forth out there. And they do have one about for our canine dogs. So we were out there, and after the event, a group of kids came up to me, probably about 4 or 5 kids, and the range was from 2 years old to about 8 years old. And the two of them were talking in front of me. You were in the Vietnam War? And I said, yeah. And one of them turned to the other one. That was like in 19 something. And I looked at him. I said, you know, these kids, this is great. These kids are making me feel real young here. I started laughing though, but the kids, you know, they had just great hearts. They were they all climbed up my lap and wanted to take pictures with me and the German Shepherd. But it was great. But just that shock of, yeah, that was 19 something. All these kids, they were born after the millennial. After going, oh my gosh!
Well, at least they didn't say 19-aught something.
That's right.
A lot of these kids have really never heard about Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Very little about it. You know, I tell you what. One of the things I've been able to do in the past, I haven't done it in the last couple of years because of my health, but I always enjoyed doing it. Speaking at at Urbanus High School,
mm-hmm.
to the accelerated students, I guess, or the achievers class. Here, probably about 15 years ago, my wife showed me an article in the local newspaper where this American history teacher at a high school was looking for people that protested the Vietnam War. And he was wanting them to come into his class and talk about how they felt about helping to stop the war and end the war. And when she showed me this, I went through the roof.
Oh my gosh.
I said, yeah, you got to be kidding me. He wants to hear the protesters' point of view. So I contacted this guy in a real nice way. I mm-hmm. said, if you want to have a draft dodging protest and left car burning, you know, whatever, that's mm-hmm. your business. But why did you consider having a Vietnam veteran that was there to talk to your kids? And he said, are you a veteran? I said, well, yeah. So he had me come into his class, and I had been doing this for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I ask the kids when I see them is I always ask them, first of all, first question, I've only got an hour with these kids. And it goes by rather quickly. But I ask them, I say, how many kids are 18 years of age right now? And usually, you know, 4, 5, or 6 raise their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I point out that I was 18 years of age when I was in Vietnam. Okay, I was your age.
Yep.
And I ask how many kids have pre-signed for the service. You know, on delayed entry mm-hmm. program. And usually half a dozen hands go up, and I ask them what branch of service that they're going into, and a lot of them are going into the Army or the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I let them know that you will not be coming home to the nightmare we came home to. And if you look around, mm-hmm. they haven't, the ones that come home. I get jealous at times, you know, when some guy locally gets met by fire trucks and the parking parade at the airport, and all he's doing is coming home from Afghanistan. And I feel like, but still, it's there are grandchildren going over there. And we promised them it would never happen again.
Absolutely.
We will never blame the soldiers, the troops, for the mistakes that the administration made. You know, but mm-hmm. I let them know that they're not going to come home to the same reception we did. And we are the ones now sending them into battle. And one of the stories I always tell in one of the young girls, of course, I was a medic, and it made me a little bit different than the average grunt. I had two jobs. I was a rifleman until mm-hmm. that someone needed my attention. Okay, I wasn't going to just sit mm-hmm. there and not return fire. You could, I guess, but not me. Okay, I'm gonna fight back just like anybody else would. And then if somebody gets hit, well, it's a different story. I put on it. It's like Andy Griffith. I put on my medic hat now, and I'm going to be a medic. You know, but this girl asked me one time, something to the effect, why would you risk your life for someone that you really don't know? You know, someone that's, you know, you're just better with them. What do you owe to them people? And I it kind of caught me off guard. I didn't know what to really say to her. So I said, I want you to look around the people around your desk. You know everybody around your desk? And she said, yes. Friends with them all? And she said, well, yeah, you know. Have you known any of them since kindergarten? And she said, yeah, this one and that one. I said, okay. You've known them for a long time. Now, if somebody was a lob a grenade in here, would you jump on that grenade to save their lives, knowing you're going to give yours up? She said, of course not. I said, okay. Let's make those people members of your family now. Just call your brother, your sister, your mom, and your dad. And somebody lobbed a grenade in. Would you do it then? Would you jump on that grenade then? And she said, well, yeah. I said, that's the difference, see? As a medic, I was in a family. And my family was my platoon. And even though we weren't related by blood, we were related by blood. You know?
Yep.
And that's just the way it is. You would risk your life for these people. I took it very personal when my family was threatened. And like any family, I got brothers today I fight with and sisters I fight with. And I mean, we're a loving family. I don't want to give anybody the impression, oh, we just still fight. But we do occasionally get friction going between us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never pulled us apart as a family. And it's the same thing with the platoon, the grunts. The grunts didn't always get along. But we were always family, and I never once didn't go to the aid of a fallen family member. And when I put it to her that way, she said she kind of understood now what I was trying to say. It's just something you're conditioned to do, you know. Well, anyway, that's my story.
Colonel Pugsley and I, for the past at least 15 to 20 years, have gone to the different high schools around here that have had, they have a class on Vietnam, and we've been guest speakers on separate times we go, and she talks about nursing in Vietnam and medics and so forth, and of course I talk about the Canine Corps, and it is great that the kids are interested. I mean, like you said, I look at their textbooks, and the textbooks are only showing maybe a paragraph, maybe two paragraphs on the Vietnam War or conflict, you know, they call it. And we are living history. And I tease Linda all the time. And I said, Linda, next time you go to a military museum, they may ask you to stay. And she just, oh, shut up. But we've enjoyed doing this for years. And living history is one of the important things. The Last Patrol, who we hope to, we're going to do a little presentation for you up there on the White Dog of the Last Patrol on the canine thing that I'll be doing for you up there. And that'll be on Thursday and Friday. And, it tells a little bit about the canine story about, of course, the dogs we had in Vietnam, but just relating to how important of the soldiers they are, and they're still so important. And a lot of people are finally starting to realize that these are more than just pets. They're not pets at all. These are soldiers who are giving their life just right along with the other veterans and protecting the men and protecting their handlers, protecting their whole squads. And there's nothing.
Now, will there be? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you: are there going to be some dogs there?
Just one.
And this dog is an ex-military dog?
No. He is training now for search and rescue.
Okay.
And he's a pup. He's a big pup, and he's about he's close to 90 pounds. He's not even a year. He's about a year and a month old now. But he's training out for search and rescue, and he is a wonderful, wonderful dog, kid-friendly, the whole shot. But he's going to be part of the presentation I'm going to do about the Canine Corps, and we'll do a special thing where we can do it one of two ways. We can have him come from way out in the middle of the crowd and just come like right down the middle, and as he's coming with the dog, he's going to be escorted by another GI. And they'll be in full battle gear, Vietnam type battle gear, and both the guys are both Vietnam veterans, and the one that's handling the dog is a Vietnam vet, was a dog handler, and that's he was my best friend over there, and he was a dog handler with me in Vietnam, and I'm very glad and proud that he's going to be there with me. He's part of the last patrol we performed up in Birmingham, Illinois, about 2 years ago. They had the moving wall up there. And we were there for 5 days doing three performances a day with the complete last patrol. And we couldn't get the whole patrol up there, but we made something special for you guys up with the White Dog of the Last Patrol. He represents the past, the future, the present, and the future.
Yeah.
But that ought to be really nice. I think the crowd would really enjoy that. But it's so important.
I know you're scheduled for Thursday at 10 and Friday at 10.
Uh-huh.
For an hour,
yep.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that's all you got. I mean, we're going to have other tents, and if you want to continue a presentation or answering questions, we can get you moved to a tent, you know, where you can have the people talk to you one-on-one or whatever. I don't want you thinking, okay, I'm done for the day. You can be done, you know. You certainly won't be tied down, but I want you to feel at liberty to continue presenting the dog to the people.
Oh, you bet. One of the things we plan on doing, too, of course, is posting that very special honor guard out there at the wall. And what's really kind of neat is that the sponsor of the wall is the War Dog Association. I thought the National War Dog Association, and they're great folks. I know them. And I saw that on the website, and my heart just did a flop. I said, oh, that's great. How cool can that be, you know?
Yeah, they are. Now, when you say the honor guard, what exactly are they going to do at the wall?
Well, actually, they'll just post an honor guard just like they do at the Tomb of the Unknown. You know, I don't think the guys will be able to march 21 steps all day, but they'll post a standing guard there, and with the dog and with another guy with a flag, and they'll probably rotate. They're bringing enough guys that they can rotate and do a 20-minute watch or whatever, and do it during the daytime. And basically, they just want to honor that wall. They want to also honor the canine.
And that'll be from what time to what time?
Well, we don't know. We know we'll have to be after 10 o'clock because we got to use the dog for that, for those presentations. But probably Saturday, they're thinking of going as many hours as they can. You know, during the whole thing. And I thought that was just awesome. These guys are volunteering to do that for us.
Well, I'm trying to coordinate as much as I can with the volunteers that we have on the wall. They're pretty strict about the way this wall is presented.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to have somebody there 24 hours a day.
Oh yeah, yeah.
To guard the wall. And as I understand it, one of the traveling walls that did not have a guard was vandalized not that many months ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, you know, what a sad state that was. Somebody got their kicks spray painting the, you know, one of the traveling walls.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, one of the things we will do is we will try to do as many hours as we can, you know, to post a guard there. And I plan on myself and also Dr. Linda Pugsley, or Chaplain Linda Pugsley, you know, that's one of the things we do also whenever the moving wall is there is we kind of post ourselves there during the evening times. That's the time when it's, you know, when it's really needed. But we're going to make sure that that's covered for you. We'll try to do that on that. And also we'll try to make sure it's covered with you with the guys that want to volunteer and be part of the and do an honor guard for you and also watch over the wall. Make sure we coordinate with you on that. The crew should be in there on Thursday early. We're going to get in on Wednesday, and if we get in early enough, hopefully we'll get in like Wednesday morning, get checked into the hotel, and then come out and see you and make sure we got everything all set up for you or whatever we need to do for you. And we
know the wall is going to be erected on Wednesday.
Oh, it's erected on Wednesday? Okay, good. Now, you have
an open... It arrives on Wednesday and it goes up on Wednesday, so it'll be ready to go Thursday morning.
Good. Is there an opening ceremony at the wall?
You know, we originally had one of our donut dollies was going to sing the national anthem and raise the colors and all that. And then she kind of fell back on that.
Mm.
And one of the bands said that they have a young lady who's got a great voice.
Cool.
And she might do it, but I'm not too sure if it'll be on Thursday or Friday.
Okay.
Well, okay, or even Saturday. I'd like to do it. When there's a lot of people there.
Well,
I'm thinking Thursday may not be that day.
Okay. Well, that Saturday would be good. We can also, if you have a PA system or whatever is out there, we'll try to arrange to do the White Dog of the Last Patrol at the wall. And anything we can do to help you, we'll talk about this, you know, off air or however we can arrange this for you. And we're there to serve you, my friend. This is an event that we're there trying to help as much as we can, and we got some vets out there that are really trying to pull for you and try to get this thing to happen.
That's good, because I need all the help I can get.
We all do. Colonel Pugsley was just at our house came over on Monday, and we spent the day together, her and my wife and I, and discussing all the stuff that what's going on, got our schedule set up, make sure the hotel was booked and had been booked. It was all set. So it'll be Colonel Pugsley and myself will be driving up there. So we're looking forward to this. And plus we have the guys that will be coming from Indiana also. And I'm going to talk to them. If there's any, if you need any additional static displays, I think some of this crew may have a couple Jeeps with the 50 calibers on the back of it. And I'll find out what they could possibly bring. If this might be too close of a notice, but I'll be talking Don and see. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Ted. I'm sorry.
I said I'll talk to Don and see what's available, what they can bring, and anything to help you out.
I talked to the military vehicle preservation group in Illinois, and what I was told was that they have a big convention in Tennessee.
Oh, boy.
They're in that time, and that's a conflict of interest for them. And I thought, you know, a convention is fine. You go there, you show up, you know, you clean your vehicle up. It's like a car show, I guess. But
yeah, I guess it is.
This is important. This is important, too. You know, and if you've gone to the last 10 conventions and you're going to go to the next 10 conventions and go to this one instead, you know, I don't know. But if you can get some Jeeps or deuce and a half or gun truck, we'd love to have.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
And I've tried and tried and tried to get a gun truck to come through, and I've just had no luck at all. It's funny, you're planning this event.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a lot of things people ask is, how many people are going to be there?
Yeah.
Well, you could lie.
You have no idea. It's the first time.
55,000.
That's right.
But you don't really know because this is our first time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the answer I tell them. We can't answer that question. This is our first festival. And we hope it's not our last festival.
Oh, yeah.
You know? but, you know, to get a gun truck, they want to know how many people are going to be there. Are you going to pay for our room and board? And you're going to pay for the gas and food? And, you know, I can say yes, but even when you say yes, they, well, we'd rather go to this convention.
Mm.
Okay, yeah, fine, yeah. But maybe next year, once we,
if this is
a success this year and we have this to fall back on,
mm-hmm.
maybe things will be different next year.
Well, we'll try to help as much as we can for this year to do what we can to make it happen for you. And maybe if, when you start planning next year, we can get the full last patrol to be part of it up there, because believe me, we've been at the largest veterans reunion for almost 25 years. We've been performing there, and it's one of the marquees of that event. That Vietnam and All Veterans Reunion in Melbourne, Florida. 31 years that event's been going on, and the last patrol's been there for 25 of them. So it's a huge event, and there's a moving wall that they have, that organization has, that goes around the country too, and great people that are behind that. Listen, we're about at about 36 minutes now. If there's anything else you'd like to add to it, the important thing, folks, is you got to remember is that this is a first-time event, and this is going to be at a beautiful grounds. And the Vet Fest 2018, the dates are Thursday. From Thursday to Sunday, and it's going to be a great event. The event will be, of course, June 14th through the 17th. And Jerry here has been working for, we at least know it's been about a year and a half since we've known about it. And I know you put in a lot of sweat, a lot of time, and I think this thing is going to be, my gosh, what a beautiful grounds to have it on, and you can't beat the location because it's easy for everybody to get to, and if we can drive all the way up from Florida to do it, you folks around that area can come, I'm sure, back to place.
we're hoping a lot of local people show up too.
Good. Good. Stand by 1 second. You know, one of the things that I found a saying a while back, and it says, if you live long enough, and you'll turn into history, regardless of what you know.
It's true.
And this is what's going to be so fun up there. We're going to have living history. We're not only the Vietnam era that you're bringing in, but also the modern equipment, whatever they can show there. It's really kind of cool to see that. And a simple thing that I find always interesting is just the helmets. Take a look at what we had in Vietnam for our helmets, and take a look at what the guys are using now. And my question to them is, how are you going to cook food in that helmet? And they look at me and say, cook what? We use MRIs. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, I never wore a helmet in Vietnam to begin with. Okay, I wore a boonie hat.
Yeah.
And I cooked my food with C4.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's crazy when you think about C4. I had like a 2-pound block of C4 I carried in my rucksack that was for cooking my sea rations.
Mm-hmm.
Those little sternal tabs took forever. And you roll it up. You probably know about this.
Oh, yeah.
You roll it up in a little ball and you light it.
Yep.
But the thing is, I never thought about this until I came back stateside. If I had took a round in my rucksack and if it hit that C4, you know, it would have set that C4 off. And you wouldn't have been able to scoop me up with a spoon, you know.
Nah, you'd have been vapor.
Yeah. Some of the things we did in Vietnam didn't make sense to us even today.
I know. That.
But we did it, you know.
Well, somebody was looking out for us, and the good Lord, I you know, I've seen that picture where it shows this angel that just looks exhausted with his hands on her head, and I said, "That's your guardian angel after one day."
Yeah. Oh well, like I said, a long time ago, we did things back then we would not do today.
Wisdom, you know, it just takes age to get it sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story real fast.
Okay.
How dumb I was. And this might have been the dumbest thing I ever did in Vietnam. I was a medic, of course, and I was assigned to headquarters and headquarters command and only attached to Charlie Company. But Charlie Company is the only company I was ever worked with.
Mm-hmm.
We were coming in off of a mission, and the aid station at Duck Foe was run by a E7 named Perez. And for some reason, Perez didn't like me. I don't know why. I'm a likable guy, but he didn't like me. And the helipad was just a few feet away from that. Now, when you're coming out of the field, out of the jungle, you normally or naturally would clear your weapon because there's been incidents in the past where vibrations of helicopters would actually make that weapon go off and you'd shoot yourself down,
mm-hmm.
you know? So we clear our weapons before we get on board and then lay the weapons in the center of the aircraft. And then when the aircraft lands, you grab your weapon and get off. Well, he saw the aircraft land from his desk, and he saw me get off, and he saw me walk up to the aid station. And just outside the aid station was a very small sign that was probably, you know, 6 by 12 or whatever, just a small sign about knee high. It said, clear all weapons before entering. And I walked into the aid station, and the first thing out of his mouth is, did you clear that weapon? And I said, yes. He goes, I did not see you clear that weapon. I said, I cleared the weapon before I got on the aircraft. He said, that weapon's cleared, put the barrel in your mouth and pull the trigger. And without hesitation, Ted, I put that barrel in my mouth and I went click. And I said, there, are you satisfied? He says, let me see your weapon. And I gave my weapon. He says, what's your serial number? And I couldn't tell him what my serial number was. He says, what if you grab someone else's?
Oh, no.
He said, you are a fool. And I thought, that's got to be the dumbest thing I ever did, you know. But when you're 18, you feel like you're invincible, you know. And that's how I felt then. We talk about being blessed.
Mm-hmm.
I am truly blessed that I came back with all of my digits, both my ears and both my eyes. Maybe not all my sanity, but I came back as a complete person. And I, as a medic, know so many people that came back in parts or partly gone. You know, and I think about what did they do with their lives. Here I was able to secure a great job for a large factory, a large company, and I'm retired and got benefits. And I've got kids and grandkids and a beautiful wife and a house and a dog. And I got all those things. But it might not have been possible had I not been able to walk or see or touch or feel, you know?
Yeah.
And I think about those guys that were my age that came back maimed. And I know that the DC, you know, a lot of these booby traps that we were bumping into all the time were never designed to kill anybody. They were designed to maim you.
Mm-hmm.
Because the DC knew that they're going to send you home. And if the people back home can see you without any limbs or in pain or anguish or whatever, that that's more of a that does more for their war effort than just killing the GI. You know, and it was a bad situation. And it's bad now. It's bad overseas. Whenever I hear about the news overseas, I cringe. I'm like anybody else, why are we there?
Yeah.
You know, you look on TV, Ted, and all you see is dust. Dust. Everywhere, dust. You know, I mean, it's just crazy. It's so dusty that the uniforms reflect that color, the boots. Dusty color, you know. I get off track sometimes, but I apologize for that.
You know, one of the things I am so blessed that I know that the Lord planned it all out. He knew that I really wanted to be in the Canine Corps, and that he would give me a partner who was much smarter than I was, and that German Shepherd certainly was. And there were times when that dog kind of looked at me, you know, you've seen the look, you know, are you really that stupid? You know, do I have to show you everything? You know, come on, man, get your act together. You know, I'm down here on four legs, and you're up there standing tall, supposed to be the smart one. And you could just tell sometimes that you were getting balled out. In dog talk, they would just kind of look at you, and God bless him that he created such a special animal there. We had such a special bond, too, which a lot of people didn't realize. But the thing is, I was groomed for that. When I look back and I think about what happened in my life and how I was always around animals. I was always around dogs. My grandfather and my dad were my dad raised golden retrievers for hunting. My grandfather raised greyhounds, and my uncle raised greyhounds for racing dogs here in Florida. And it was, you know, we were always around puppies and dogs, and it was a natural. And
yeah.
When I went to an air fest, and they had the Thunderbirds there. Now, this is back when the Thunderbirds were in F-100s, so that kind of gives you
a... Wow, that's a long time ago.
And, you know, they had an open cockpit and had a white scarf, and they said, contact, and they turned the propeller around. I mean, no, I'm teasing. But I was really impressed, of course, with the Thunderbirds, but what really impressed me was the Air Force, back then they called them the Air Police, had a canine demonstration with the German Shepherds. And I saw that, and I knew right away that that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to go in the Navy. I didn't want to go in the Army. I wanted to be an Air Police canine handler. And I tell you what, when I went to the recruiter and I told him this exactly what I wanted to be, the recruiter looked at me like my dog had looked at me, like, you know, come on, get it together. Are you really serious? You really want to do this? I said, you bet. Well, son, sign up. You will get it. As long as you do good, you will get that. I'm sure you will. But it's a very special bond that we all have as veterans. And you mentioned that when you were talking to the little girl and that asked the question. It is a brotherhood. It's a brotherhood and a sisterhood, and it's been paid for and bought by blood. And that's what is so important. That's what people really need to understand, that as far as I know, that, you know, our enlistment, our oath that we took to serve and protect has no expiration date. We took that oath, and there was no time when I left the service was I told to stand down from that oath. Were you?
Well, it's kind of, since you mentioned that, I might as well tell you that one of the things we plan on doing on Saturday, and I've talked to Lieutenant Colonel Pugsley about this, was that there's going to be a lot of veterans out in the audience, of course their wives and kids and whatever, but we'd like to get the veterans to go ahead and take the oath.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and it doesn't mean you're being inducted. It just means you're doing the same thing you did before. You're
spread
allegiance to the country.
That would be
it's
awesome.
It's something that's going to happen, I think, on Saturday when the majority of people are there.
Okay.
And who knows, maybe the World Book of Records might recognize that as the biggest ever oath swearing in the world. I don't know. But I just think it's important for the veterans to have that opportunity to do that.
That's a great point. Not this first time I've heard a group wanting to do that at an event like this, and I think that's outstanding. Smart move.
It's got to be done by an officer.
Well, we got one.
He was the first one. Yeah, we got one.
We got one. She's one of the best. I'm so pleased to be able to come up and be able to help you guys out up there and be able to visit. And I thank you for taking your time to come on the radio show with us. And we just hope that the folks that are out there in that area, anywhere close that can get in there, come on in. And the folks all around, like I said earlier, I'm coming all the way up from Zephyr Hills in Tampa, Florida area, and I'm sure we've got people that I know that are coming all the way from Indiana, from northern Indiana coming down, and hey, there's a lot of folks out there that I've even got a guy that may be coming out from the upper state New York who was a canine handler also, and also was a canine with the New York State Trooper. Him and his wife may come down with their motorcycle and their trailer. But we are just trying to encourage everybody. This is going to be a great event, Vet Fest event. I just know it. I know it's going to be a great event. We're happy to be there for the first, and that's what's kind of fun. There's only a first time. There's only one first time, and that's what's kind of neat to be there on the groundbreaking of this, on that one first time. And from there, I'm sure that it's going to grow and grow and grow and grow. And We just are prayerful that this is going to happen, and that. Also, you forgot to mention that they're having a Volkswagen show there also.
Yes, they are.
Yeah,
that's right,
which is kind of cool.
Door to us. and a Volkswagen show is going to have. They inspect over. This is not their first show, so they have a history. But they expect over 1,000 Volkswagens. And,
wow.
You know, that's the buses and the love bugs and,
oh my gosh,
and the dune buggies and any collection of a Volkswagen will be there. And they're free to come over to the Vet Fest, and mm-hmm. our Vet Fest people are free to go over there.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
You know, and so they're going to be intermingling, I guess, you know.
That was the first vehicle I bought. I saved up my money when I was in Vietnam, and I bought a Volkswagen camper bus. That's the first vehicle I bought when I came back, and I had that all through all my service after Vietnam. Loved that bus, loved camping in it, and it was just awesome. I really loved it.
Yeah. You never need Volkswagen bugs for kind of neat. I never owned one.
Uh-huh.
My sister dated a guy that had one, and one time we'd go out to get pizzas, and he'd let me drive. I was 15.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was pretty wild. You know, check the doors with the windows up, you about blow your eardrums out. Well, pretty airtight.
Well, listen, we're about ready to wrap up. Is there any last thing that you want to say before we go?
Just thank you, Dad, for having me on your program. And I encourage people to go to the website.
Yes.
And check anything that's new and updated. It does change from time to time. So if you will, it's the veteransfestivalgroup.com. And there's no spaces in between the Veterans Festival Group. Mm-hmm. But feel free to go there and look things over. And there's a list of motels and a list of restaurants, campgrounds. And we got camping on our grounds as well. But it's primitive camping only. There's no electric mm-hmm. or water. But there are some campgrounds nearby that offer full hookup. There's golf courses to go to. There's all kinds of things to see on the website.
Well, it's a great website. Matter of fact, we put a link to it on our radio website, and also there's a link to that. And we have your permission to do that, right? We can link that up?
You bet you do.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, we're putting a link up on that, and also on our event calendar. All the information is on that event calendar also. At our event site, or excuse me, at our own website, veteransradioministry.com. And we hope that the folks really come out for this. And we're praying for good weather. We're praying for a nice,
yeah,
safe event. And before we go, I want to pray for you, my friend. Jerry, we just thank the Lord and lift you up, that the strength that you need to continue this, the work that you're doing here, Lord, is I ask you to keep giving him the strength. Also, Lord, to guide and direct all that he does. And, Lord, to booster any time that he's starting to feel down, that he's starting to get running low in energy, energize him, Lord, because this is truly a mission work that he's doing. And we ask this in the name above all names, in Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you, Ted.
You're welcome. And we will talk to you soon. Looking forward to see you up there. And that's VetFest 2018. And that's going to be it's going to be June 14th through June 17th. And folks, it's going to be a great event. Effingham, Illinois is going to be at the Mid-America Motor Works at 2900 North 3rd Street in Effingham, Illinois. Look forward to this, folks. It's a lot, all kinds of things you can do. And Jerry, thanks again for including us in your plans. And we look forward to talking to you soon. God bless you,
okay,
Jerry.
Thank you for having me.
Come and listen in to the radio station where the mighty hosts of heaven sing. Turn your radio on, turn your radio on. If you want to hear the songs of Zion coming from the land of endless spring, get in touch with God. Turn your radio on, turn your radio on, and listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on, heaven's glory share. Turn your lights down low, and listen to the Master's radio. Get in touch with God, turn your radio on.
brother. Listen to the Glory Line chorus. Listen to the glad hosannas roll. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. Get a little taste of joy awaiting. Get a little heaven in your soul. Get in touch with God. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. And listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on. Heaven's glory share. Turn your lights down low. And listen to the Master's radio. Get in touch with God. Turn your radio and the mothers and the many friends who've gone before. Turn your radio on, turn your radio on. Some eternal born and we shall meet them over on the hallelujah shore. Get in touch with God, turn your radio on. Turn your radio on and listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on.
That, of course, was Reverend John Steer and Turn Your Radio On. Thanks, John Steer and Donna Steer, for providing music for us for this Last Patrol radio show. Great music from a great artist and a great veteran and a great patriot. Hi, this is Pastor Ted Marshall. Thank you for listening to the Last Patrol radio show. The Last Patrol radio show is a production of Veterans Radio Ministries. Veterans Radio Ministries is a ministry of Great Hope Christian Fellowship Church in Tampa, Florida. You can reach us by going to veteransradioministries.com. Again, that's veteransradioministries.com. If you'd like to contact us, please do so. Thank you for supporting and thank you for listening to the Last Patrol radio show. Tell your friends about it. Email your friends about it. Text them, Twitter, tweet, whatever you do, but spread the word of Jesus Christ. Thank you for listening to the Last Patrol.
We were proud to call him brother. We were proud of what he'd done. Would it have been any different if America had won? Not too late to thank him or tell him that you miss him. You can tell him that you love him. Touch his name upon the wall. One of a million unsung heroes, whose story forever goes untold. He left us slowly numb, but his spirit still lives on. He's walking with us on the last patrol.